Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Victorian Government's Investment Centre. My name is David Hannah. I'm the Deputy Secretary responsible for international coordination in the Victorian Government, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you all here today. Your Excellency, Mr. James Michel, President of the Republic of Seychelles, Mr. Jean-Paul Adam, Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Alain Sanange, Chief Executive Officer of the Seychelles Tourism Board, Dr. Rolf Poyet, Vice-Chancellor of the University of Seychelles and Special Advisor to the President on the Environment. His Excellency, Mr. Dick Esperon, High Commissioner for the Republic of Seychelles. Ms. Sandra Vegarty, Australian High Commissioner to the Seychelles, based in Mauritius. Mr. Gaetan Barayon, Honorary Consul General of the Seychelles, and the Honourable Michael McKellar, President of the Australian Institute of International Affairs in Victoria. Welcome. It is indeed a great pleasure to, on behalf of the Victorian Government, to welcome you here for this important occasion, an opportunity to hear directly from a very renowned leader in the Indian area, in the Indian Ocean area. President Michel is well known for his dedication to education and economic reforms in the Seychelles. He has achieved a great many things in the 8 or so years that he has been President of the Seychelles, and also in the lengthy period of time in which he was a minister prior to that. He has been acknowledged internationally for his commitment to sustainable development and to educating the international community on the challenges facing the small island developing states, particularly with respect to the impacts of climate change. Although it may seem on first glance that our countries are indeed worlds apart, there are many similarities between Victoria, Australia and the Seychelles. We are both, of course, part of the Commonwealth of Nations. The capital of the Seychelles is Victoria. And we both have strong and rich multicultural communities. And I think this is an important binding ingredient for us. The Seychelles is home to people from French, African, Indian, Chinese and Arab backgrounds, and I could actually say the same thing about Victoria. We both benefit enormously from the richness of the peoples that make up our communities, and the harmony that we're able to achieve amongst those peoples is, I think, something that joins us strongly. Like Victoria, the tourist sector is incredibly important to the Seychelles economy. It employs a large proportion of the labour force, and I imagine... how many people here have actually been to the Seychelles on holidays? More importantly, how many people would like to go to the Seychelles? Okay, I don't think you've got a particularly difficult job in selling this message. And that's despite a near-perfect day in winter in Melbourne. But at the same time, that's an easy part to run, but the Seychelles government is doing a great deal to diversify the economy. This is absolutely essential, and a lot of work has been done to develop and promote industries around agriculture, fishing, small-scale manufacturing, as well as supporting, I understand, a growing financial services sector. Yet another similarity between the Seychelles economy and Victoria. We are working actively to promote our own financial services sector, so I'm looking forward to any comments that the President might make on that this afternoon. With these similarities in mind, we hope that today will mark a further deepening of the connection between the Seychelles and Victoria. I have to confess that prior to your visit, Your Excellency, I was not aware there are something like 22,000 Seychellois resident in Victoria. That's Victoria, Australia, not Victoria, Seychelles, just to make that clear. That's an extraordinary number, about two-thirds of the total number of Seychellois resident in Australia, so it's entirely fitting, I think, that we are honoured with the first stop on your visit, and I would now like to invite you to address people gathered here today.
Thank you very much for your introduction. First of all, I would like to say that it is a great pleasure for me to be here in Melbourne, Victoria. But perhaps I shall start by what I should say last, that is, invite all of you to visit the Seychelles. And yes, I did not also realize that we had about 22,000 Seychellois or Australian of Seychellois origin. living in Victoria, among whom I have an uncle here, still alive in Melbourne, in his 90s probably. And the rest are in Sydney, Brisbane, elsewhere in the north, preferring the warmer climate, shall we say. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, when looking at Seychelles and Australia, our affinities, as has been said, belie our differences in geographic size. Our peoples know the attraction of isolation, while also the difficulties this presents. We know that our environments are both part of our biggest strengths and also part of our greatest vulnerabilities. We know that for many of our challenges, we can't just accept what is tried and tested elsewhere and blindly expect it to work. We know that we must be innovative to survive and prosper. We are keenly aware of our environments are our bread and butter. We know that our environments are critical for our potential to create wealth for our children's future. Without environment, we have no economy. Our peoples stand as the guardians of some of the miracles of nature, from the Great Barrier Reef to our own World Heritage sites of the Vallée de Mai and the Aldabra Atoll. But we also know that our environment is infinitely connected to the health of our global environment. Therefore, we know that part of our duty to protect our own environment, our own livelihoods, is to also contribute to a healthier environment for our planet. Ladies and gentlemen, we should not set ourselves any illusions about the current state of the world economy or the world environment. And I would like to stress at the outset that we should not attempt to speak of one without the other. We currently face a crisis of sustainability. And as things stand, the concept of sustainable development is a myth. It is a myth because we cannot speak of sustainability while we see climate change threaten the very existence of thousands of islands and the people who inhabit those islands. And we, as a human race, are as yet unable to act decisively. We cannot speak of sustainability while we continue to value consumerism over conservation. We cannot speak of sustainability where the world is struggling with fuel and commodity prices that are spiraling out of control, and yet there is still insufficient investment in renewable energy and food security. Our experiences since the World Summit on Sustainable Development in Rio do not give us much hope that the real transformation that we need in international development is possible. But this should not mean that we must abandon hope. On the contrary, the scale of the challenge ahead of us only reinforces our determination. History has shown us that great transformations often involve the building of momentum before reaching a tipping point which allows us to achieve a breakthrough. For us to make this breakthrough will require courage, the courage to stand up and try to do things in a different way, in ways that may at first be uncomfortable, in ways that challenge the status quo. The Rio Plus 20 summit next year may just be another meeting where we continue to speak of sustainable development in its abstract sense, without really making purposeful strides towards meaningful transformations. But the process may still yield results. We must channel our efforts into a positive force. We must continue to gather momentum. 1992, the leaders of the world took the first difficult step in identifying that the world economy was creating a curve of self-destruction. Over the last 20 years, despite good intentions, we have not managed to have much impact on the arc of the curve. But more than ever, we realize that more of the same is not just good enough. The children of Rio, those born in 1992, are on the threshold of their adult lives this year. They are on the cusp of joining the world of work or pursuing the academic requirements to get the job of their dreams. Seychelles and Australia are two countries that are fortunate to be able to speak of positive growth and relatively good employment at a time of gloom and pessimism in the world economy. But in the era of globalization, we know that unless we can create true conditions for global sustainability, we cannot truly guarantee the future of our children. We know that the challenge of sustainability is a tough one. True sustainability is not achievable simply at the national level, because the world has become too interconnected for this to be possible. We need to aim for sustainability at a planetary level. At the same time, it is obvious that there is no global government. Thus, our responsibilities start with the political commitments of each sovereign state. We must make sure that as governments, we are prepared to take courageous steps to move us further towards the tipping point where we can truly make a difference at planetary level. We cannot wait for others to act before we act ourselves and be the example. It is for this reason that Seychelles has moved to declare over 50% of our land territory as protected reserves. In this respect, we are number one in the world. We know that the future of our people, of our nation, depends on us being able to preserve our environment. By declaring such reserves, we forego development today. We forego opportunities today to ensure that we can create the right opportunities for tomorrow. With a population of just under 90,000, of course we have 22,000 in Melbourne, and a land area of just over 450 square kilometers, such efforts may not seem to make a difference in global sustainability. But we have to start somewhere. And therefore, climate change is currently the most obvious indicator of our crisis of sustainability, and also one of the biggest impediments to our efforts to achieve sustainability. And as we approach the next UN meeting on climate change in Durban, we must remain focused not on national perceptions of gains and losses, but on the need for tangible actions. We must avoid the blame game that have often marked negotiations this far. There have been lengthy debates on these matters, and undoubtedly there will be more. It is regrettable that many still view these debates as ideological. There is no ideology involved in survival of peoples. Let us put people and the science available to improve the lives of people at the center of the climate change debate. The climate change debate should not be about who pays for what. It should be about how to help those who need it most. I take the opportunity to commend Australia for its substantial contributions towards climate change adaptation and mitigation funds. I commend also the Australian leadership on questions of climate change that has sought to engage actively with small island developing states. Every crisis also brings about an opportunity for us to improve difficult situations. The current energy crisis is that moment where we must redouble our efforts to make renewable energy technology more affordable and more readily available, particularly for developing countries. And small island states in particular face fuel bills that fundamentally increase their vulnerability to global shocks. Accessing renewable energy is not only better for the environment, it will better insulate such countries from external shocks, especially the small island states, while also creating new economic opportunities in countries that currently have few comparative advantages. And one of the most of the prerequisites of any roadmap for sustainability is peace and security. Australia and Seychelles share values that allow us to work together proactively on issues of mutual concern regarding the security of our planet, the survival of the human race. Climate change is potentially a driver for further conflict. We note with concern the impact of the recent drought on the Horn of Africa, and Somalia in particular, which will further aggravate, I am sure, the problem of piracy. The Western Indian Ocean has already been badly affected by the rise of piracy off the coast of Somalia, which has badly affected maritime trade in the region. But maritime piracy has become a global problem. The effects of piracy attacks have driven up the cost of insurance for shipping and cargo, as well as commodities that have to be transported by sea. The Gulf of Aden connects Europe with Africa and Asia and is one of the maritime highways of the world. More effort is required by all global partners to tackle the scourge, by the entire global community. We need to strengthen law and order and the ability to govern in Somalia itself. Otherwise, we will never be able to resolve the problems of piracy. And in the long run, it will not only be piracy, but Somalia may become the nesting grounds for terrorism. And as you know, terrorism has no frontiers. It will not affect only Seychelles and the surrounding countries. It will affect the entire world. So therefore, I feel that our two countries can work together to better coordinate the international response to the problems that Somalia poses today. Good governance is also a critical component in all efforts to achieve sustainable development. No country is perfect. But since independence, Seychelles has achieved a lot and has been consistently ranked among the best governed in Africa. But we want to continue to do better. And the support of Australia in our macroeconomic reforms has illustrated some of the exchanges that we can do. Seychelles is also willing, with the help of partners such as Australia, through the UN system, to share its experiences in nation building with other African countries. Despite the fact that we are small, we are an example of harmony, which is sadly often absent from our region. Seychelles offers an example of a diverse but well-integrated society, which is a melting pot of cultures and traditions. In many ways, we are what many societies would want to achieve in terms of building a nation. We represent a possible future for societies still desperately trying to solve the puzzles of class, race, and religions. In fact, I like to compare ourselves as the United Nations in microcosm. Seychelles had no indigenous peoples when it was colonized in the 18th century. It belonged to nature. Millions of years before, it was the center of a land mass called Gondwana, which then split to the movement of the tectonic plates and the continental shift. But our group of islands has remained at the center, and the peoples that have since come to inhabit this beautiful land do so with a duty to mankind. Every Seychellois considers himself proud that he hails from a society that has come about through the mixing of races, cultures, and religions to create a people that is unique in its cohesion in this sadly divided world. And it is through our cohesion and our unity that we can best act as custodians of this great natural heritage. And as Seychellois, we must also belong to nature. We believe that we belong to nature. Nature doesn't belong to us, and our identity is inextricably woven into the fabric of our natural heritage. Ladies and gentlemen, the challenge of sustainability cannot be solved by any one government on its own. I am grateful for this opportunity to undertake this state visit to Australia, as it is a chance for us to exchange views on what steps can truly be taken to reach the tipping point to achieve the transformation that the world needs, that the world badly needs today. There are many big steps that need to be taken at a global level, but many of these big steps can start through small steps, even between just two countries. Australia, for example, has been very supportive of Seychelles in its economic reform process since 2008. At that time, the fuel and financial crisis threatened to completely derail Seychelles' hard-won achievements in terms in development, which gave us the highest human development index in Africa. Our debt to GDP ratio had reached over 180%. A black market currency economy was undermining wealth creation, and we were struggling to meet our external commitments. However, with the support of the IMF and friendly countries such as Australia, we put forward a debt restructuring and macroeconomic reform plan, which has yielded unprecedented results in just 3 years. We are most appreciative for the political support of Australia in this process, as well as the ongoing technical assistance we have received and are still receiving in improving our fiscal processes. Australia has also been very bold in its new compact to provide educational scholarships to Africa to rapidly improve the abilities of young professionals in developing countries. The key to sustainability is the education of our young people, and I believe passionately in that. I am very proud that a large number of our young professionals have benefited from these Australian aid scholarships, and I am confident that they will bring back experiences that will further strengthen our resilience and adaptability as a nation. It is very easy for two countries such as Australia and Seychelles to be very honest and direct with each other. And this is how we see our partnership. It is very easy for us to understand each other and to learn from one another. I very much look forward during this visit to further strengthen what is already a very dynamic partnership. In terms of investment and tourism, we have the opportunity to create a new concept of shared development where we build on each other's experiences. In terms of the marine environment, we very much hope to be able to strengthen our understanding of our oceans. We believe that together we can tap into new dimensions of the blue economy. And in terms of renewable energy, we can share technology and promote joint ventures to mutual benefit as part of the green economy. Ladies and gentlemen, our two countries share a desire to build a new compact of sustainable development. We know it starts with us, and we are determined that no matter the scale of the challenge, we shall not falter in our determination to succeed. And with that, I would like to thank you for your attention.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President has very kindly agreed to take some questions, if anybody has. Can I ask you to raise your hand? Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency, Mr. President. One of the main issues which was raised by developing countries at the Copenhagen Conference was a lack of support by the industrialised world to assist them in sustainable development. I was just wondering what your thoughts on that issue are.
Well, definitely Copenhagen was a disappointment, especially for the small island states whose very survival is being threatened by the issue of climate change and also by the negative effects of climate change. And Seychelles is no exception. Our islands are made up of two different types of islands. We have the granitic islands, which are mountainous, and the coral islands, which are flat islands. But even the granitic islands, most of the infrastructure and development, farming and so on, takes place on the coastal areas. And with the rise in sea level, our farming is affected, our food security is affected, our infrastructure is affected, and in fact the whole country will be affected with a continued rise in sea level. And also, for the last year, we've had a very unusual drought. And our reservoir was down, our main reservoir was down to 18%. And we have to spend about $25 million to import desalination plants to be able to sustain our requirements in this crisis situation, hoping it's going to rain soon. So Seychelles is part of the Oasis movement, which is a grouping of small island states. And definitely Copenhagen was a disappointment. Although we tried to make our voices heard, we tried to speak as loud as we could, but of course small voices cannot be as loud as bigger voices can be loud. And unfortunately we came out of Copenhagen without any legally binding agreement to ensure that there is a global agreement in reducing carbon emission and thereby taking the first steps towards saving the planet, in the process saving the human race. But as I said before, we must not stop there. We must continue. And now, you know, for us, I think it is very comforting to see that an island continent, a big country, industrialized country like Australia, understands that better than most other industrialized countries. And Australia can play a very dynamic role by becoming a leader and take necessary action, at least bold actions to be those first steps, which then can be followed by other industrialized countries. That it can be done, it is being done, so let's move forward. Because what is happening today is affecting small island states. Today, says we are in the forefront. But as Australia knows very well, you have one of the treasures of humanity, the Great Barrier Reefs. Our beautiful oceans, our beautiful coral reefs have been affected also by coral bleaching. With the help of Australian experts, we've learned how to plant some corals in some areas for transplanting to affected areas, and it's helping a little bit. But your coasts also will be affected, your islands will be affected. It's going to affect the entire planet. So the sooner I think humanity and all the industrialized countries understand that it is also the future of their children that also is at stake, I think we will all realize that we have to find innovative ways to protect our economy, but at the same time save our environment, save our planet. Today we help save the small island states, and tomorrow the same technology, the same innovation will help save us also and save the earth.
So.
My name is Apollo Mushubachoga from the African Studies Association. Your Excellency, one of the issues raised consistently is the lack of investment, say, in research, sciences and development, particularly by developing countries. One of the issues raised for Somalia is the lack of harvesting, say, water. There's the different levels of water. We talked about reservoirs in which is less than the rest. Would you like to comment what sort of, maybe, as you see it, initiatives that are actually happening in developing countries to address this problem of investing in science? We've got scholarships, but we don't know exactly, the government seem to contribute to that.
Well, I think the problem of tomorrow, if we continue on this trend, will not be fuel, oil, or gas. It will be water. Water will be the commodity of the future. And climate change is affecting that commodity, and we continue to affect it if we don't do something about it. Especially parts of Africa recently have been very much affected. And I think that a lot of today's wealth that are being wasted in areas perhaps where it is not that essential for the survival of the human race should best be challenged in ways to be able to conserve water. Because lack of water creates all sorts of problems. It creates famine, it creates other problems, and this brings the seeds of insecurity, of unrest, and so on. So I think the world community should find ways and means. It has started, but I think we have to continue. We have to put more resources into it to finance more the conservation and of water in countries that are affected, so that from water you have crops, you have food, you have less famine, and then people are happy, and this is when development starts starts taking place and continue to evolve and develop. But I think Africa itself, for example, have a lot of resources. I said some time ago that I don't like begging, but I want to be able to be given the opportunity, the resources for me, to stand my own two feet so that then I can be master of my own destiny. I always refer to a Chinese proverb which says, do not give a man a fish every day, give him a line and a hook and teach him how to fish. So I think in Africa we need stability, we need resources to develop our infrastructure, because there is water, there is energy, and this will help also in the stability of the continent. It will also help in reinforcing the framework of democracy. It will help to ensure good governance and accountability, transparency, and all these are the prerequisites for the stability of a country and for development. Because you cannot have proper development if you do not have stability. And stability is a prerequisite, good governance, and then you have the structures in place for you to be able to develop. But of course, you will need resources to be able to build infrastructure to develop. And this is where I think the world community should come together and see how this can be done.
I'm Marcus Wigan. I've worked in the Seychelles on the energy strategy with a couple of other people. But the question I'd really like to hear your observations on is the fishing and cannery is an important part of your current economy. And the marine resources and environmental resources, they can be monetarized in connection with tourism, would seem to be at least beginning to be in conflict with it. I just wonder what was happening in that area and how you were looking at it.
No, I think that we've managed to balance things quite well. Our tourism is based on how we can integrate the development of that industry with the protection of our environment. We have hotels that have been built, good hotels, large hotels, not too large, about 200 rooms, 400 rooms. But we have managed to ensure that they integrate well in the environment. And also we have an innovative approach of getting the private sector, the investor, to participate in the management of and the protection of that environment, of that ecosystem of the region, of the district where they are operating. So it is working very well up to now. Just to give you an example, we have an island called Silhouette Island. Probably you know Silhouette very well. It's been declared as a natural laboratory. We have one hotel there, and that hotel contributes to in the management and the protection of the entire ecosystem of the island, which is unique in terms of fauna, flora. So this is what we're trying to do, and the number of tourists that we have coming to Seychelles are well balanced so as not to affect the ecosystem too much. We don't allow charter flights, only scheduled flights, which makes it possible for us to maintain that equilibrium. Fishing also, as far as demersal fishing is concerned, this is reserved only for our nationals so that we don't overfish. Industrial fishing for canweir is mainly for pelagic species. This is controlled through the Indian Ocean Commission, which controls the stock and ensures that we do not overfish, and then we take necessary actions once we feel that there is a possibility of overfishing, that is reducing the number of licenses for the fishing boats to come in and fish. So there is this which cushions the impact, adverse impact on the environment. But now we are moving a step further by introducing renewable energy concepts. We've got a project which is being funded as a grant from Abu Dhabi, which will give us a number of wind turbines, which we've concentrated on one weekend island only, so as not to affect the topography and the visual aspect of the main islands. So this will give us a certain amount of energy requirements. And then we are also actively looking for investors who would want to come and set up solar farms and commercially, and then sell us the energy which we put in the grid, and then which will reduce our dependence on electricity generation by fossil fuel. So all these are steps we are taking to ensure that we go more towards renewable energy. We have also a program to ensure that on some islands we introduce electric cars and ban completely cars run by diesel or other types of fuel. And gradually we introduce these to other islands also when feasible. It is my plan to make Seychelles one of the leading island states, dependent as much as possible on renewable energy, so that we can continue to retain our leadership role in terms of environmental protection and preserving this unique part of the world for the future, for our future generations.
Yes, John.
President John Faulkner from the Department of Premier and Cabinet. Seychelles is a member of the Commonwealth, as we speak earlier. I wondered if you would share your thought on what role that organisation might play in addressing the issues that you've been discussing today.
Yeah.
Well, the Commonwealth
is like a big family, as you know, and we are a member of the Commonwealth, like Australia and other former British colonies and some other newly admitted countries as well. And I think it is a very, very important forum with under the patronage of Her Majesty, the Queen. And it provides an opportunity for that big family of nations from the Commonwealth to get together and share ideas, share views on the current issues that exist, on the challenges facing the world community, especially the members of the Commonwealth. And quite a large number of the members of the Commonwealth are small island states. So we really have a lot to share, and also with our partners who have bigger economies and who are bigger countries as well. And we have a lot to share and a lot to see how we can get together and participate, and also use the Commonwealth as an organization as a stronger voice to be able to go to the higher world community like the United Nations and other institutions like the Bretton Woods Institution, and try to advocate the plight of the small island states, the plight of smaller countries, and see how sometimes how they measure the performance and wealth of the other countries and the economy is not right, it's not correct. Because calculating an economy only on the per capita index is not actually the right way of doing it, because we face a lot of vulnerabilities as well. And it is not the same as looking at a bigger economy, a bigger country. So the Commonwealth will be able to understand this better, because most of us form part of that category of nations. And also the Commonwealth has played a great role in the recent years to ensure that there is better governance, better accountability, better transparency, and stronger structures for vibrant democracies. And this has helped my country a lot. And today I must say we have a vibrant democracy of which we are proud of, which have been recognized by the international community. And I think the Commonwealth can continue to play a role in that. But at the same time now, it has, I think, a bigger part to play in making the world realize that we need to do something about climate change.
Yes.
David Cheeseman, Mr. President.
Yes, David.
Staff in the Ministry of Finance. The question I'd like to ask you is in relation to the floating of the currency in 2008. What do you think has been the effect of that on investment within Seychelles?
I think it has done a world of good to the Seychelles. It has put everything back in perspective. And as you know, we had an artificial currency. You know, you've been there many years, and now everything is back on track, solid foundation, and we have a thriving private sector now, which has become the motto of the economy. The government has become the regulator and the facilitator, and we have a lot of young Seychellois now and ordinary people taking their small loans and going into business. And we are creating also a nation of entrepreneurs, which to me is very healthy in this new global environment and in creating these new sessions. Thank you.
Are there any further questions before I claim? Oh, yes.
I'm a member of the Institute of International Affairs. I was wondering if you would describe your water supply, if you were very worried about it and you think it's a primary a problem for us in the future. Because it's a tropical area that you come from, in my mind, you know, Oxford, you would have plenty. But I imagine if you've only got one island with mountains, then you might have collection problems. What is your system of water supply?
Well, the granitic islands, we get our water from the rain, eh? But throughout the centuries, as far as we can remember, we've had adequate rain during different times of the year. And this has been enough throughout to sustain our requirements and to ensure that our country remains green, our forests always healthy, and so on. But recently, with the change in the weather pattern, the last 2 years we've seen less rain than we usually have. And this has created a reduction in the amount of water that we capture for storage. And of course, with the increase in tourism, with the increase in population, not much, but we've had an increase in development, we managed to build a lot more houses, more hotels. What used to be enough with the rain that we had a few years ago is not enough now. And the economic problems that we faced during the last decade did not make it possible for us to invest in new reservoir. So this has sort of made our problems a bit worse. But if it rained like it used to, there would have been no problems. But because of the drought and the change in the weather pattern, we've had a shortage of water. So now we have a plan which we have elaborated for the next 30 years, is to collect as much as possible water from the stream into bigger reservoirs and build another big reservoir which would be sufficient over the next 30 years, and also have some desalination plants as backup facilities should climate change impact more negatively on us. Thank you.
Yes.
There's been a lot of publicity in the press on the BBC about shark attack in the Seychelles. Recently there's been incident happening in the Seychelles. I mean, is that due to climate change, or what are you doing about it to stop further incidents happening?
Interesting question. When, you know, I don't know if you know, here in Seychelles we've had no history of shark attacks. In fact, divers, people doing snorkeling, they used to go and swim amongst the sharks. In fact, we have people from overseas who come to Seychelles to swim among the sharks because they were friendly sharks. And they play with humans. They have enough fish to eat, so they don't bother to eat human beings. Not tasty enough, probably. So this is how it has been. And we've marketed our country as such. So what happened a few weeks ago? Tragic accident. Shocked us and shocked people who knew about it. It was a freak. We tried to look at the shark, couldn't find it. We thought it had gone. Then last week we had another tourist, Englishman, again attacked and mortally wounded. Sad, eh? It shocked the nation as it shocked the world. We're doing our best now. We brought in experts from South Africa, from the Middle East, to try and locate the shark. We've had an exchange of advice from Australia, advised us on certain actions to be taken. And the last information I got is that they have identified it as a great white. So the great white, we've never had great white in the tropics, on the Seychelles. They are in colder waters. But this great white has migrated north. And I was asking my special advisor, Mr. Payette, I don't see attribute that. It tells me with the change in the Pacific, it has driven the water in the Indian Ocean has become colder. So somehow the cold current also from the South Indian Ocean have moved north, and somehow this great white, if there is only one, I hope, have managed to come up and surrounded the islands where people used to swim and the yachting are taking place. And this has happened. So now we're getting experts to come and help us to locate the white shark and do something about it. We are also in the process, Mr. Saint-Ange, I think you're aware, to getting some nets at installation to put it. But this is the situation now, but we are actively taking all steps necessary to ensure that it doesn't happen again and that we try to locate it and hope that there was only a stray one. Because if there are more, then it could be quite serious, not only for Seychelles, but for other tropical countries. It's really, really sad. It shocked all of us. Thank you.
One last question.
Thank you. Mr. President, I'm Rod Kelly, I'm a political risk analyst, but I don't wish to necessarily ask a question on that right now. Given during this transitional period that you've spoken about changing, should we say, the structure of the economy and the funding of your GDP, I presume fishing does play some role. We saw here in Australia, we saw a program, which one of your ministers, of course, was featured on, telling us about Somali piracy. Could you tell me, is it still a problem for the Seychellois government, given the size of your territorial water, to be able to protect these waters? Or can you tell us that you're getting some support from other countries? So I understand you have a small American base in the Seychelles. Is that correct? Is it
No, it's not exactly like that. But I will start by saying yes, it is affecting us a lot. Piracy is affecting us a lot because we are right next in the middle of the ocean, opposite Somalia. We have 1.2 square kilometers of exclusive economic zone where most of the pelagic fish is concentrated, and this is where most of the tuna purseining takes place. And because of piracy, we have less fishing now. Although recently some of the governments, like the French government, the Spanish government, they put armed escort on their fishing boats, which helps in deterring pirates. But still, a lot of fishing boats have migrated elsewhere, to the Atlantic, to the Pacific, and we have less catches than we used to. In fact, last year, about 4% of our GDP was affected because of piracy, action of piracy. So it is affecting us. It's affecting our tourism industry as well in terms of yachting. We had a thriving yachting business, yachts going to outer islands and so on. But now, with piracy, we don't have this business anymore. So it is affecting us. We have some help in the sense that NATO and the European Union are helping some surveillance together with a broader surveillance system from the eastern coast of Africa to the Gulf of Aden. We have India helping as well, and Australia also has given some help, and we have a couple of American UAVs stationed in Seychelles to do patrolling, although they do a little bit more of that. But it helps. And we have the UNAV4, which is a European task force, which has stationed an airplane, a reconnaissance plane in Seychelles, to help us do the surveillance. We have two aircrafts ourselves. India has put one at our disposal until we get one, which they are donating. The Abu Dhabi government has given us five smaller patrol crafts. We have two ourselves. One was given by India, and another one we had a few years ago. So all these, we doing our best with the capacity that we have to protect our EEZ and also to fight off piracy, which is affecting also our demersal local fishermen. In fact, Seychelles is the only country in the region with a very strong policy on piracy. We have the best anti-piracy law in the region. You come, you attack us, we go after you until we catch you wherever you go. You take our fishermen, we come and get you. We sink your boat, we save our fishermen, and we catch you, we bring you home, we try you, we put you in prison. We have about 55 Somali pirates in our prisons now. So they will be there until the prisons in Somalia will be ready and certified by the international community that they will go and serve their terms there. Then we send them back to Somalia to serve their terms. But no nonsense with us. You come and attack us, we deal with you. No questions asked. We have the question afterwards in court.
Could I ask an ancillary question to that, if you would, please, President?
Yes.
Sorry about this, but given the large expanse of the waters that we're discussing and the smallness of most of the craft, as we're led to believe, of these pirates, how do they know exactly which lane a specific vessel will use, or you're not allowed to tell me?
Perhaps they are more sophisticated than we think. You know, it's a network, this, eh? You know, they have bank accounts in London, New York, everywhere, which cannot be proved, of course. But this is how it's. You know, they have intelligence everywhere, and also they use motherships. You see, they catch a big ship. They use it as mothership, very innocent, and then there are the skiffs towed behind. And then they use the skiffs to attack and get more. They go as far as Maldives and India. The Indians caught some of them the other day. They are very sophisticated. Because they get a lot of money, they can afford to be sophisticated. But this is what we have to destroy, is that the power to be able to continue doing these sort of crimes.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm conscious of the time and it's my role to draw this to a close. President Michelle, I, on behalf of the Victorian Government, thank you for the honour you do us by coming here and providing this address. On behalf of the audience, thank you for a stimulating, entertaining and thoroughly informative, as well as challenging address. I think the insight you've provided, the honesty of the responses you provided to a range of questions, whether it's water, piracy, shark attacks, or the importance of education and multicultural harmony to addressing the challenges that face not only your country but ours and indeed the planet, has been both a pleasure and a privilege to be part of. So may I ask you all to join me in thanking the President.
Thank you. The pleasure was mine. It was great to be able to interact with you. I appreciate your patience and your hospitality as well. Thank you.